Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast at Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. That helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Maybe you found it, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge, your Under the Weather podcast host this week, like I'm not, thankfully, every week, but I'm joined by a man who will never get tired of screaming, "OU sucks," Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
You know, there are things that I think about. You know, I'm not superstitious. I'm a little stitious, but I changed out of my my full beach matching short set and kept the shorts, but put my Longhorn polo on after the first drive where we went three and out, and you know, we basically scored on like our next six. So it may have been me. I said OU sucks a certain amount of times. I'd have to go back and count it so that I can do the exact thing next year. I don't know. Gerald, when something is as good as what the game we're about to talk about, you start to get a little bit, you know, a little bit superstitious, a little bit optimistic. You know, these feelings start creeping in. I've always said you don't get too high on a team when you win. You don't get too down when you lose. But there's very few games in the history of one's life that go as perfectly and flawlessly as the one we watched on Saturday. And we get to talk about, like, OU sucks and very likely might be true. They might suck. But Texas looks good.
It could have been like 70 points. Like, let's just put that out there. Like, it should have been 52 points at the very least. But it could have been 70 points. But Texas called off the dogs. And I texted this to you following the game. I can't ever remember either team in recent memory, and I've been watching Texas football for quite a while now, getting to rest their starters for the entirety of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And with that, OU still wasn't able to score on Texas's second unit defense. Granted, they probably weren't pushing as hard. They were trying to get out there. But the opportunity was there for them to put up just a pride touchdown. Like, we're not going to get blanked by Texas. And they just rolled over and took it. Like, if the shoe was on the other foot, if this was a Texas team that was on the Brent Venables ship, I feel like the hat would be being passed around right now to, like, get that guy out of here. If you watched his post-game press conference, that's a man with no answers. Like, I just don't. They're starting to remember why they ran him out of town a decade ago, but we're going to keep talking about that. But it's going to be a fun one tonight. We've got a lot to talk about with Texas and OU. We've also got a lot to talk about elsewhere on campus. Women's swimming got started. Soccer, killing it. Volleyball continues their level of excellence. Tennis is back in action, both for the men and women. And a weird result in the fall ball season. We'll obviously close the show out with some bang the drum. And for a school that was all gas, no brakes, we kind of shied away from that early in the year because, well, that was the motto last year, and it was all brakes, no gas in a lot of second halves, but that did not happen against OU. And a lot of the players have been talking about the revenge tour, and this one felt cathartic. I'm just going to be like, I live in Oklahoma City, if you don't know, and I went to the barber shop today, and I was rocking my Texas polo with my white Texas Pegasuses last year's. I didn't love this year's, I'll be honest with you, but I rocked last year's Pegasuses on my feet, and like my barber's actually from Texas, from San Antonio, and he was hyping me up, and it felt good. It really felt good to be able, after these last 4 years, especially after last year, to be able to just like, you know, yeah. Texas did the dang thing, and we haven't really been able to say that in a very long time against OU. And so now, Texas looks like a legit team again. Texas looks like a legit contender. For the fifth of six games, they've held the opponent to under 21 points, under three touchdowns. Incredible, incredible performance from the defense. Obviously, Quinn Ewers comes back, and the offense catches fire to the tune of 49, should have been 52 points. Ewers did the dang thing. There is so much to talk about. And there are advanced stats people that are like, that were arguing on Twitter about when they should officially consider this game garbage time. Like, is it halftime? Is it halfway through the third quarter? Like, what is garbage time in this game? Because that is an OU team that just did not, it looked like an FCS team. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, this looked like a team you pay $1.5 million to come and pad out your non-conference schedule. There's no two ways around it.
Yeah, if there was any drawbacks to this game, right, it's that you didn't get to pad the stats enough, right? Bijan's Heisman campaign didn't get the fourth quarter cushion that it could have. He came out with 5 minutes left in the third. Quinn Ewers didn't throw a pass. I think with the final 17 minutes, or Texas didn't throw a pass.
Threw a pass.
Yeah, the final
any
seven
of the three quarterbacks that played.
Right, the final 17 minutes of the game. So you know there could have been more stat padding, right? Like you could really argue garbage time was at 42. Minutes and take away the Jonathan Brooks touchdown. I know, Gerald, that pains you, and you should not do that. You want it. He deserves it. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy. They got up 42-0, and they easily had enough time that they could have scored 3-4 more touchdowns had they kept doing what they were doing. They were merciful, and I appreciate that. Again, the twos getting in with Hudson Card in there, with Charles Wright in the threes getting in there, Jonathan Brooks getting a touchdown, Jaden Blue got carries. I mean, we got to see a lot of guys on both offense and defense, and I mean what a celebration, like, right, for you know, guys who've been around the program for a while, for walk-ons playing, like, that's, I mean, incredible stuff. Like, in, like, as a walk-on, you never think that you get to step on the field in a meaningful way during the Red River game. You don't. Like, you come to school, you practice your butt off, you scout team, you do all the things. You don't think you get that reward. So, incredible, right? Like, incredible for the freshman who got in there, right? Your first time. Again, you probably don't expect, if you're not a five-star freshman, that you're playing in this game for a year, maybe two. Just really incredible for that. I mean, yes, it could have been way worse, but I mean, the part that broke my heart was OU on the last play of the game, as time expired, got an 11-yard run, which basically took the yardage differential under 400. It was over 400 yards in Texas's favor, yardage differential. I mean, it, like, as sound a tail whipping. It's hard to do that against Rice. It's hard to do that against air, to get plus 400 yards. You have to completely shut someone else down and just completely, you know, punch every time with your own team. Like, just, I mean, an annihilation that I've never seen. All, you know, all the stats, not since 19, or first shutout of OU since 1965, largest point differential of all time for Texas. I mean, it all those stats for sure, but just on the eye test, it's been a one-score game the past 8 years, even though OU has won a lot of those. Sark has absolutely dominated this OU team 6 out of 8 quarters. Unfortunately, he has a 1-1 record to show for it. But, I mean, like, the first half of last year and all 4 quarters of this year, OU didn't belong on the field with that Texas. So, hopefully, you know, that becomes the norm. And Sark just is that coach, that guy who knows how to get his team up in that stadium for this game, and this becomes a long tradition.
You mentioned, like, it was cathartic for some of these guys. A guy like Jordan Whittington, who's been here for 4 years and hasn't beaten OU, right? You've got a guy like Deshaun Jameson, who was a freshman the last time, Snacks Coburn, a guy who in 2018 was not really a contributor, but got to clap back at Baker Mayfield, which was nice, right? But then that team went back and lost to Oklahoma in the conference championship game, right? So, like, these are people that have not beaten Oklahoma in basically the entirety of their collegiate career. And it felt like a lot of that catharsis. And I'll just like be honest with you. I had an OU fan texting me at halftime being like, man, like you guys got this. And I was like, didn't we both watch the same game last year? Like this could be weird. But it felt like some demons were exorcised. It felt like Sark really wanted to make a statement, but he was classy pregame talking to, you know, Chris Fowler and talking about the impact that Lee Corso has made on college football. He was classy during the game by not scoring 70 because he very much could have made this a statement game. And I think in not doing that, he made a statement, right? Where it's like, we know who we are. We know what we are. We don't need to do anything. We don't need to go hang 70 because we looked like the better team wire to wire. Outside of that one opening, that one three and out to open the game, which gave me a little pit in my stomach, not going to lie. But after that, it was all downhill. Ewers completed like 14 of his first 16 for two touchdowns, finished the day 21 of 31 for 289, four touchdowns, a weird interception. Ball slipped out of his hand off the back foot, right? Like he was trying to throw it out. The ball slipped out of his hand, apparently, as he was trying to throw it out of bounds. Just kind of wobbled. It's one of those ones our old high school D coordinator would quack like a duck and fake like he had a shotgun. That was just what it was. It was just a weird one. Jordan Whittington had himself a game, both catching five receptions for 97 yards and putting people through the crust and into the mantle of the earth on pass blocking. JT Sanders, putting up record numbers, going to put himself on both the season and career record yards in his first year as a starter. 5 for 71 for two touchdowns. Rather pedestrian night for Xavier Worthy, 4 touchdowns, 37 yards, and a touchdown. And he also had some really incredible blocking. And I think we have to talk about the passing game first because a lot of what made Texas successful on the ground was the fact that like they were able to test the OU defense deep. Whittington was able to find some space. Sanders was able to beat his man on basically every target he had, and they were shading coverage to Worthy. Worthy still got his, but overall, it opened up the offense for them. And Ewers came out looking like the man, like we knew he was going to be. He looked like the same. He looked better, honestly, than he did against Alabama before the injury.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? You saw Alabama with Ewers and early on with Card really say, we're going to, you know, make the quarterback beat us and focus on flooding the box, and we'll take one-on-one deep matchups. You know, if you can get it there, good luck. And Worthy was an absolute menace in that game. OU never gave Worthy a one-on-one deep matchup. All of his yardage came on short stuff. The only, you know, single coverage he got was on that beautiful RPO design to get the safety to step up off that motion on the little kind of post slant in the end zone, right? Which again went up and got the great catch. He did have a drop on like a Ewers scramble, but you know, it was the exact same kind of area the next play where Bijan made his crazy catch. So it just showed Ewers was going to get the ball to somebody on that spot in the sideline. But you know, so Worthy's, you know, secret weapon is always going to be his speed. And when they say, you know, we'll put a guy on you and a safety just 20 yards deep over you, it makes it hard to do that. They know that Texas, you know, likes to max protect sometimes and just let Worthy double move or one, you know, run one route. And you know, you don't need five guys covering zones if they're only running two or three receivers out there. So OU really made a point to do that. And you quickly saw Texas kind of adjust and just say, okay, we'll throw a lot of 11 to 18, maybe 25-yard plays, or we'll get 24-yard underneath crossing routes to, which is a very deep crossing route, to Whittington, where we'll just eat you up there if you're going to just take Worthy out. So Texas adjusted to it. I love the way they ran the RPOs. That's where, as much as I love Card, and we'll talk about Hudson Card, you know, didn't play a ton in this game, but you could feel his presence. But as much as I love that guy, there is that little bit with Worthy, right? It's that processing speed on the RPO. He can ride that, you know, all the way and quickly get the ball out of his hands in 0.1 seconds when he makes the read. He seemed to make all the right reads in the RPOs when you went back and look at the tape. It's that, you know, he doesn't have elite athleticism, but it's his ability to get out of the pocket, and he doesn't have to take that extra second to reset his hips to be able to throw the ball 25 yards downfield. He can flick it with a wrist with no leg. I mean, most of his touchdowns, it wasn't throwing with his feet, which, you know, any quarterback coach says you don't do that, but he could do it, just pure arm strength, put a bullet where only his guy can do it. And you saw it time and again, that throw to Jatavion Sanders for the first for both touchdowns, honestly, but that first one with the anticipation, the touch to get it over the just some really incredible stuff from Ewers. And again, that's where you see that generational stuff. But it was also, again, Sark's. You saw Sark feel so confident in his play calling. I'm going to run multiple motions. I'm going to run RPO, and this guy will make the read and get the ball to where it needs to go, right? His misses, you know, we talked about that arm strength, the fact that it quacked out of his hand. I'm sure he thought that was going to go five rows up in the stadium because he can fling it that far. That
one, somebody a souvenir.
Right, and the Whittington touchdown, I think, I have to imagine that's one where you're just trying so hard to throw that perfect. It's like hitting a three-pointer when, you know, there's no one around you. It's almost harder because you're so wide open, right? And Whittington could have had even more with that touchdown. Wish he would have got it. But yeah, I mean, just the passing game was perfect but limited, right? They didn't have to get 20 guys involved to be successful. Now, they had five or six guys, and it could have been any one of them on any play depending what the defense did. Whoever the defense took away, they attacked the other way. But it was two wide receivers who got catches, two tight ends, three running backs, right? I mean, it was a small cadre of athletes that Texas just stuck with, and they were all, by the way, healthy. That's all your ones, you know, which is really nice this year to have everyone healthy there in this game, and you saw it. I mean, there was still more. This easily could have been a 350, 400-yard passing game with X getting a big one, with Sanders and Whittington catching a couple more, right? Even more to the backs. Like, there was more here. Like, this was a merciful 49, truly, in a way that it feels, you know, mean to say.
No, and you're absolutely right, because Texas did not throw a pass for the entirety of the fourth quarter. They pulled their starters when they went up 30 or 42 nothing, and they didn't look back. And again, if they left the starters in, I think they all have multiple additional touchdowns. So it's a statement in and of itself. You don't pass for the final 17 minutes of the game and you still score 50 points. Like, that is absolutely incredible. And for his trouble, Quinn Ewers was named the Big 12 Conference Newcomer of the Week and the Manning Award Star of the Week.
Now, do you think there's any bias there? Do you think the Mannings will give that award to Arch when he's at Texas, or is he have to abstain? Is this a recruiting thing? I mean, yeah, there's a lot for the internet message boards to talk about on that one.
I mean, Arch is a three-star. We know that. So, like, let's just leave it there. He's probably not going to be – he's only a .999 rating, not a full one. It's okay.
Right, right.
But, no, like, the recognition that he is getting, like, but it's hard to not think about a world where he doesn't get crushed by Will Anderson and, like, what Texas looks like now. Wish in one hand and spit in the other, see which one fills up first. There's a lot to be had there, but we're living in reality, and the reality of the situation is Texas looks good. Texas is favored in all of the games remaining on their schedule. I believe they're currently a 17.5-point favorite. That line shot up a full touchdown against Iowa State from the open, which is weird. But let's get back to the point. Let's get back to the topic at hand. Bijan Robinson once again had himself a day in the Cotton Bowl, 22 for 130 and two scores, added on two receptions for 15 yards, fourth in the nation in total offense with 848 yards. And again, he didn't play for the final basically 20 minutes of the game, right? Like, he did not have to do it all. And there have been some games where he had to do it all, and this was a game where Bijan just did what Bijan does. There were a couple of spots where he was a shoestring away from going 60. He was a shoestring away from going 40, and I cussed every time for reasons we'll talk about later in Potstradamus. But, like, Roshan was great. 9 touches for 57 yards, added on 2 catches for 38 yards, which is deceiving because he had a reception for -2 yards and a reception for 38 yards. So there's something to be had there. Keelan Robinson, everybody got touches. Keelan looked great, by the way. Four for 32, and then he had 2 catches for 32 yards and a score. On that touchdown, we do have to talk about the blocking of Xavier Worthy and JT Sanders. Like, we'd be remiss if we didn't have that conversation. Jordan Whittington.
Yeah.
First of all, we all talked about Whittington during the game, where Whittington just put, like, he buried that dude. He put him in the Earth's core. But when you look at it, you go back and rewatch it, watch the clips. Xavier Worthy was like textbook, right? Put his body between the defender and the runner. As soon as the runner's clear, disengage. Like, it was absolutely textbook blocking. And shouts to Brendan Marion for getting those dudes right, because in years past, the wide receiver blocking has not been that good. And so part of the reason why the running game was so good is because guys like Brendan Thompson are coming out and blocking and creating space for these guys in the second level and getting the springs that turn into big runs.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Jordan Whittington's agent, I make two tapes that I send to NFL teams. One is that, you know, that diving catch that he made just in space, fully extended, absolute fingertips, strong hands, like a perfect catch. and, you know, include some of his plays where he catches screen passes and quickly gets 10 yards and trucks somebody. Like, he can do all of that. But I also make a second tape. I used to always joke about this when I covered the Spurs, saying, you know, it Manu Ginobili's is his Hall of Fame induction, which recently happened. They would have one of you know, him scoring and doing, but just an entire second highlight tape of passes, just all of his passes, because it wasn't just, I mean, he could just do magical things. In the same way, Whittington deserves to have a blocking tape. If you tell me there's only a handful of tight ends in the country who block better than him, I believe it. I don't know that I've seen a wide receiver in the country this year on any team who's a better blocker, either run blocking or down the field after the catch blocking, than Jordan Whittington. Like, again, I put him in a elite tight end category. I mean, he run blocks better than most of our offensive line at this point. but, you know, like, it's that selfless stuff. And like you said, to see Thompson and Worthy, who aren't the biggest guys, do it, it shows that it's a coaching thing, it's a mentality thing, but it shows that they're bought in. And I mean, that team stuff, we'll talk about on the defense a little bit too, but trusting each other, doing a little something for each other, goes to a culture that leads to wins. But yeah, I think, you know, Roshan, that play that great on Roshan, because he got the yards after, and he had a great little run, and I wish he had a little more sideline. He could have had a touchdown. All the other backs did, but some credit on that goes to Sark. Just that, all the motion and the stuff they've been doing before that to get the defense flowing one way, and then Ewers turn around to hit Roshan on that little screen with a tackle and center pulling to clear the way. I mean, it was just such beautiful play design, and then Roshan, of course, ate it up. If you want to talk about those seniors you're happy for, you have to be happy for my guy Roshan Johnson, the heart and soul of this team. But Keelan, too, getting that, you know, this is why he came to Texas, right? Getting that exposure in a big game, you know, being he may be the third running back, but he also may be, on any given time, the fourth most dangerous guy on a top 10 offense, right? So it's like, you know, it is he's got a lot going on there. But yeah, the thing, Gerald, I think we have to talk about here. Multiple people texted asking how excited you were. Your guy, Jonathan Brooks, a year...
JB2K, baby!
A year ahead of schedule, at least, getting his touchdown in the Red River showdown.
Shootout rivalry.
Whatever you want to call it. This was the stat that blew my mind, per Pro Football Focus. Four of the top five graded running backs in Big 12 this week were Longhorns, and Jonathan Brooks was amongst that. That is incredible.
He's a year ahead of schedule. And let's, like... OU might be this year's Kansas. Like, let's just put that out there. Like,
sure.
I was listening to, if you haven't listened to the full cast After Dark from this week, they've got a great, great section on Texas OU. But they, like, they're calling OU Kansas's get right game this week. So, like, that is how, by the way, OU is a touchdown favorite. Like, I'm legitimately considering putting my kids' college funds on Kansas. Like, KU plus 7 against OU. This, come on, like,
if one quarterback's healthy and the other isn't, or they're, even if they're both healthy, then you might not be wrong.
Yeah, it's possible. Anywho, moving back along, this is not the type of game we expect to see from OU. But part of the reason why the running backs were so successful is the offensive line did its job. 4.2 line yards per rush. OU's front seven had a 6.7% havoc rating, where they did something to create havoc in the backfield. Kyle, do you know what the approximate is, rounded, 6.7%? Do you know, of the Texas total plays, how many 6.7% is?
Oh, I imagine it's got to be like 4 or 5 plays.
Five havoc plays from the OU defensive line that has terrorized Texas fans.
I remember
with,
like,
simple twist stunts.
Yes.
3 years ago, I'm pulling my hair out. It's like, they're just a twist stunt. We ran this in Pee Wee's. BVYA, Buffalo Valley Youth Association. Like, come on. Like, get it together. But, like, and the way the offensive line performed was really, like, Kelvin Banks is emblematic of that. I think it's something that I want to call out. Like, there's a play where the OU player got real upset because Kelvin Banks did what our offensive line coach used to say was, in the red zone, make your man score a touchdown. And that's what Kelvin Banks did. And that little OU defender got upset about it, got in his feelings about it. But that's exactly what Texas needs to do, is just be big, be nasty, be mean, and make them pay. Make them get pissy about it.
I actually thought it was very, very generous of Kelvin Banks to, one, keep that man alive.
It's the only time they got to the end zone.
And two, exactly, to give them their one trip into the end zone came via a ride from Mr. Banks. It's such a beautiful statistic. But yeah, I love it, right? Like Sark said, love of feistiness. He's a freshman. You're one of the best like pass blockers in the country. You have something you want to prove, that you're also one of the best run blockers. You think you are ready to play in the NFL today if rules allowed it. I love it. You look like you are. Go out and be nasty in this game. Your first time, you're 18. You got things to, millions to be made, and you know, legend to be written. You're already turning into a fan favorite. I mean, I loved it. It was like one of my favorite plays of a game that featured a lot of really incredible, wonderful plays. I really love having him there for the next couple of years. Like, just, it's such a nice feeling to truly have. It's weird. Like, I don't think people understand how rare this is to have a freshman be this dominant. Like, you could argue right now Kelvin Banks is the best freshman in the country at any position, like the way he is contributing. Yeah. Like, Malachi Starks for Georgia is doing a lot for a good defense. Like, I get it. You know, that running back for Ole Miss, sure. Like, there's some people doing some things. I'm not saying there's not other good freshmen. But, God, I mean, at
pound
left,
for pound, literally and figuratively?
Right. At left tackle, at the position, you know, of most import? Yeah, I mean, absolutely agree.
If he's this good at 19 years old, imagine him in 2 years at 21 years old, right? Like, imagine him when he, because let's be real here. He's not in his grown man body yet. That big man is not in his grown man body yet. It's not constructed like a grown man body. It hasn't even had, he was not an early enrollee either. Like, that is fresh. That is a fresh fall enrollee. So imagine him in a full off season with this tech, like, this is going to be, and one of the things that we have to talk about for the future is, like, there's only one guy graduating off this offensive line. There's only one. They're only losing one, and they're getting one back who's an upperclassman next year.
Yeah, he's gonna have to fight for his spot if they keep improving every game. I mean, this offensive line legitimately was a strength of Texas this week. They kept a clean pocket. They, you know, run blocking, still there's room for improvement, but they had a couple. I think Bijan's second touchdown where they created that wall kind of ran him off tackle, and it went back and watched the breakdown of it. I mean, perfectly formed a wall where Bijan was one-on-one, and I think the guy acted like he didn't see him so that he didn't get worked. But it was admittedly flawless, that I don't know that you could execute that run blocking any more perfect. So, I mean, there were run plays where they were truly great. But in pass protection, when you have your freshman quarterback coming back from an injury and you want to keep him clean, by God, they kept him clean all game. Kept him clean. I mean, that's, you love to see it. I'm going to say the six, because Carrick gets in there a lot, or Sanders drops back and blocks a lot, and both of them did fantastically. I love all the guys who are in there competing, blocking, all the receivers blocking. The blocking on this team is far ahead of where we thought it would be. And we said, if Texas can just move up incrementally from where they were last year, they don't have to be perfect. This can be a good team. And look, this is what we're seeing.
We said, you don't have to be great, just don't suck. You don't have to be great, just don't suck. And they have far exceeded that expectation, and it's showing all over the offense.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
We had a similar tune for the defense. You don't have to be great, just don't suck, because the offense is going to score a bunch. And the offense is going to score. The offense could have played an Iowa football game and won against OU based upon what the defense did. Held OU to 195 American yards. 195 yards. 39 from the starting quarter. I can't tell you the last time an OU starting quarterback had fewer than 300 yards.
Right.
39 American yards. Kyle, I had to do some research on this for the Inside the Numbers. Do you know the last time that Texas held a team to less than 200 yards. Excuse me.
Oh, geez. Like, I legitimately bet it was in the, like, if it wasn't 2005, I bet it was, like, in the late 90s.
Okay. So it's not that far back. The contemporaries for OU here are North Texas and San Jose State.
Oh, sure. There you go.
2017.
That's fair.
2014.
I was thinking of conference games. I was not thinking of the cupcake games. Yeesh, OU. That's and specifically that San Jose State team was bad.
Historically bad on that San Jose State team. Kyle, literally every other FBS team in the country scored a touchdown. The Iowa Hawkeyes scored. UConn Huskies scored a touchdown. The Oklahoma Sooners could not. I don't even know what to make of this, Kyle. I don't know what to do.
So, like, there's that thing where I've been rooting for ULM all year, right? Like, it's good for the teams that we play to be good, right? Texas, according to Pro Football Focus, take it for what you will, has the 10th hardest strength of schedule right now. Okay, we'll see. like, I want UTSA to be good. It's good for the teams you beat to also be good. It looks good. With OU, I hope they lose out. Like, I hope they lose every game. I don't care if it hurts our strength of schedule or whatever. I just hope... I hope they've scored their last points on the season. Everyone else can shut them out too. Whatever. Like, let this hurt. Like, OU football coach Matt Rhule. he can make Venables as DC. I don't know. But yeah, it's just this.
I don't want that. I think Rhule is too good. Keep it far away from OU.
That's true. Yeah. Give
Venables and Jimbo both 5-year extensions.
I agree. They need time.
Texas, again, held them to 195 yards, 2 turnovers, 3 of 15 on third downs, 2 of 4 on fourth downs, 9 of 17 for 39 yards and 2 interceptions. One was a weird pop pass out of their Wildcat formation that I'm honestly glad they didn't do more of. 42 yards, 156 for 42 carries for 156 yards for 3.7 yards per carry. OU was 0-for-5 in power rushing situations, which means they did not get a single conversion when they had less than 2 yards to gain. It was just an absolutely dominant performance. The offensive line, the interior offensive line, Tavondre Sweat, Kondre Coburn playing like a man who is in need and is hungry for an NFL contract, not just snacks. But Moro Ojomo had a heck of a game. Like, this was just a total defensive domination, and it started in the trenches.
You have to give credit, right? I mean, OU had a game plan, and you think back to the Bryles kind of when they didn't have any quarterbacks, what, 2015 or something like that. And they gave us everything we could handle in that one. This was Lebby, you know, from the Bryles family, literally, was I think, you know, trying to channel that. You knew they were going to do something. But you're right. I'm glad they didn't do more of the Wildcat, but there was very clearly a point where Texas started playing downhill and teeing off of all running plays, Wildcat or otherwise, where they just really... they really couldn't do anything. And again, I think a lot of that comes to that defensive front. Tavondre Sweat is really a revelation. Like, some of the plays he's made look like, you know, Coburn's having a breakout year. People are giving him first round grade. I think if Sweat has 3 more games and people realize he's just the same size and has probably as much upside, like, look at what TQ Graham is doing, right? Like, these guys coming out, these big linemen at Texas, these are brisket boys, right? They low and slow. They need a little time to cook to get to where they really are. Except Byron Murphy. He's just pure, you know, top sirloin. But
he's been a grown man for 10 years.
Correct. But you know, they need a little time. And fifth year Coburn is having the breakout season we all wanted him to have his whole career. And again, Sweat needs like 3 more games where people realize, oh, this guy's just as good, and he could be a second, third round pick who has a good, long, healthy career. I mean, especially first 2 downs, NFL guy that size with the strength, the technique, the ability to get up and knock down passes, you know, like, I love the going back all the way to the Tech when, you know, there was the pass knockdown where he just clubbed the guy's, you know, hands down and went to block him, hit him in the head to swim, and immediately was in the quarterback's grill within 2 seconds. Like, that type of technique, plus power plus want to, right? There was a Coburn and a Sweat on key downs where they beat their man, had to run stuff in the middle, and made the tackle. Like, slid in, blew up the play, and then made the tackle too, right? Like, for a defensive tackle, we talk about it all the time with Puna and with a lot of these guys that, you know, GMs and coaches understand their value, but fans don't always, because it's hard when your job is to eat up blocks. But right now, our interior of the line is doing way more than that. They are stuffing runs, but they're also making tackles for loss. They're also getting sacks. Murphy had a sack in this one. I mean, Ajomo has been great. Honest to God, like, that, as much as we dogged them last year for lack of living up to the hype, they have gone the other way this year, where we tried to kind of talk ourselves out of it and play down a little bit where our defensive line was going to be. But if you look at, you know, the way that they're graded out, again, four of the five top in the Big 12 this year are on Texas defensive line. Those guys we just talked about. I think Tech had the other of the five, the guy who made a play against us. But Devondre Sweat, Keandre Coburn, Byron Murphy, and Moro Ojemo are looking like, you know, the heart of that defense, and it lets the rest of the team do things around them and play that complementary football. I alluded to that earlier. There was a play, a fourth down, right? Like we said, they were 2 for 4 on fourth. One of those was the fake field goal, and great, you know, great gumption, great upset playbook that OU went for it. The next play, they got 8 yards. The next play, they got 8 yards, so it's second and two. Texas held them three straight plays and didn't give up a first down and didn't give up points because they went for it on fourth down again. Like, that stand right there kind of made my eyebrows go up and say, wait a minute, this team is here to do something. And then a couple series later, OU goes for it again on fourth and three. They have their quarterback who clearly is in, you know, it's a good play design, has overshown where weeks pass and years pass. He feels like, well, I got to come off my man because I need to make this tackle. I don't know if anyone else is going to be here. I got to play hero ball. You saw Overshown. You could see his eyes say, nope. And he goes with the running back who would have the very easy completion if he comes off, stays with him, and then comes flying. Jalen Ford comes flying down from behind him and makes the tackle on a fourth down stop. Like, that's the stuff where you say, I have to trust my defense. And you're starting to see a team that trusts that the other players will play their assignment football so you can play yours, and you trust if you don't make the play, if you do miss something, whatever, someone is there, people are swarming. If you chip a guy but don't bring him down, two more guys are going to swarm and tackle him. That trust, that feeling that it is 11 playing together is something that we haven't had in a little while, and it honestly, it's been night and day from last year. It really truly has, and I you know, can't give enough credit to the defensive coaching staff, to Pete Kukowski, who took a lot of guff in the offseason. And I've seen people saying this is a Patterson game. I'm not saying Patterson did not have an influence on it, but this was a Pete Kukowski called defense. Just the calls that he did were the things that we watched on tapes that he did at Washington. Like, this was the way that Pete Kukowski plays defense. This is how it's supposed to look. And, you know, again, I don't know that 39 yards is how it's going to look every week, but it looked like the optimized version. And I really hope that, you know, we can channel some of that going forward, because the second half performance, Gerald, that I saw from this Texas defense might be offensive, defensive, or otherwise. And Sark had some good offensive first halves last year. Maybe the best half of football that I've seen a Texas unit play in a decade. You know, like, it was flawless.
Things I want to call out, not just the interior, but like guys like DeSean Jameson. He's looked like a different player from year to year. Like, think of where he was 2 years ago, and honestly, how infuriating it was sometimes to watch him play. Like, he looks like a guy who could even talk to it. Like, I wouldn't have let him talk to an NFL scout 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like a guy who may have a shot to test out and do some things, right? Jaron Thompson looked really, really good. Jalen Ford didn't have to be the tackle vacuum, but they still got it done. DeMarvion Overshown, like you said, was able to play his spot, play his man, and not have to overcommit. And that is, and Sark mentioned it. You talked about trust. Sark mentioned it in the press conference. It's like, this is a defense that trusts each other. This is a defense that feels confident with the man next to them. And that's a powerful, powerful thing. If you can come in and say, I know that the person next to me has my back. They've got they're going to do their job, so let me go do mine. Like, there's something mighty powerful about that in team sports, because that's how trust is built. Sark talked about it again today. Consistency and execution. That's how you build trust on a team, and that's where Texas is at right now, is they are consistently executing, and things are going really, really well for them. quickly talking about the special teams and kind of other stuff. Texas, like we said, could have had 52 points. Bert Auburn missed one, 0-for-1 on the day, but he hit all of his extra points. The Machete punted three times. I'm shocked he punted three times for 40.7 yards per. But Texas held OU to 33 yards on two returns. Penalties were really a non-factor. Time of possession was relatively even. So, like, not a ton to talk about there. But we do have to talk about Kyle the Pod, Stradamus picks. You officially have pulled ahead 8-7 in this one. You hit on a 4.5-minute drive. Hit it by a second, by the skin of your teeth. That's fine. It is what it is. It counts. It counts. There was a Texas definitely allowed less than 400 yards on that one. I got that Texas would go over 2.5 sacks. They had three. I did not hit on the explosive touchdown run. There was a run of over 25 yards, but it was not a touchdown. Jonathan Brooks had an 18-yard run, but that doesn't count for this one. So Kyle officially leads 8-7 in the Podstradamus for this year.
Yeah, the scoring drives was wild, right? They scored 92 yards in 3 minutes, 80 yards in 3 minutes. They scored 79 yards in 248.
You were sweating.
76 yards in 307. And then they had the short field, 47, 54 in 2 minutes and 2 minutes 30. And then I had to go back and look. It was actually their very first touchdown drive. The 12 play, 90 yard was 4 minutes and 30 seconds, which again, to go 12 plays and 90 yards, that's very quick. 4 minutes and 31. I'm like Vegas sometimes when I get set those lines just right to where I could win. It was ridiculous, but I'll take it.
Hey, man, a win is a win is a win. You can't be mad about it. So we'll be back on Thursday. Hopefully my voice sounds a little bit better by then, but it probably won't. We'll break down the matchup against Iowa State. Now's the part of the show where we catch you up on all of the other fun stuff that happened on campus, and we down the 40. Number one, volleyball swept TCU 3-0. We talked about that on our Thursday show briefly. They're hosting Kansas State this weekend on Wednesday, holding firm to that number one spot. Volleyball team's good. I wasn't sure what it was going to be like. They graduated a good amount of talent. They had a lot of change and turnover in the portal, but this is just another really, really good team for Coach Elliott. It might be one of the better ones we've seen in the last few years.
They have the talent to be, for sure. The thing that I like about this team, I've said it a couple times, is they have the depth this year. They brought in a lot in the transfer portal. They have a good recruiting class the past couple years, but they have the depth where they can, if it's not one player, someone else can step up, and I think that's the difference. They are probably going to sweep the next few in conference. They're just a cut above.
Speaking of a cut above, men's swimming was in two places at once this weekend. Most of the team went and knocked off TCU 180-95 to open the 2023 season on Friday. The rest of the team went to the SMU Classic to put on a show. Texas had just 9 swimmers in the pool there, but posted 348 points, 42 points ahead of second place Texas A&M. Even with half a team, we're still twice as good as those Aggies.
I mean, that's how good this team is, right? They can compete in two different places and win both. They're just that good. Admittedly, the 9 were all, I think it was 8 swimmers and 1 diver, who were all very, very, very good. So that's how you can do that. But the 400-yard medley relay set a new SMU pool record time, top time in the country this season. Carson Foster was the high score of the meet, winning the 200 backstroke, 200 IM, and a third place on the 200 medley relay.
Sounds impressive. On the ladies' side in the pool, they started the season with a 187-91 victory over TCU. 13 event wins for them. Just another big weekend in the natatorium for the ladies.
Dust in the boots off, as they like to say. Usually they call their opening weekend the dust your boots classic. And they, again, you don't wear boots in the pool, guys. It's a clever Texas thing. They dusted them off. Even more dominant than the men's team, though. I guess the men were missing a few, but 187-91. Good, solid, sound victory to get the season started. We're expecting big things from both of these teams.
Good work, ladies. Another ladies team that is doing big things. Number 23 soccer goes through and just beat both Kansas Deeps, took all the Sunflowers home with them to keep their unbeaten streak alive at 12 matches. A 4-0 win over Kansas State and a 2-0 win over Kansas.
Yeah, the Kansas State one was interesting because you were thinking they were going to break out, and they finally did in the second half. In just a 14-minute stretch, they scored all four of their goals. Defender Cameron Brooks getting two, MJ Cox getting her fifth of the season, Jilly Shimkin scoring one as well, and three assists from Trinity Byer. I mean, we know she can score goals. She had some really sick assists this weekend too. She's looking like, you know, while Missimo's out, she's taking on the playmaker duties and looking like, you know, they're going to be battling for best player in the country or at least the conference as soon as she's healthy.
I mean, if she's in her bag facilitating like that bodes well for the rest of the team, right? When your best player is also one of your best facilitators on the pitch, like, you cannot do better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the Kansas game, again, it was kind of similar in the second half. They scored both of theirs, kept the shutout. Mackenzie McFarland, the fifth-year senior, and Jilly Shimkin scored in this one. Again, two more assists for Byers. Five on the weekend. Five of the six goals scored all came from her. They kind of played it to her and let her players run right off her. And she, again, the Kansas one specifically, they play into her. She's got her back to the goal, and she just kind of drops this no-look, shifty, like, if Neymar does it, you know, it's all over SportsCenter, just dropped in the path of an on-running player to put it in the goal. It was just gorgeous stuff. But also, those are clean sheets. Someone has to keep them, right? That's Savannah Madden moving into third all-time with her 23rd career clean sheet. And just a couple stats here.
Is that good? Is that good, Kyle?
It feels like it's very good. Yeah, I mean, she's a super senior, so, you know, give her credit for coming back to climb the record books. But this is Texas' fourth straight conference shutout, tying a school record they've done three other times. The scoreless streak now stretches to just shy of 400 minutes since TCU scored in the second half and they had that 1-1 draw. They've stretched their program Big 12 conference record unbeaten streak to 14 matches dating back to the beginning of last year. In their last 14 Big 12 matches across 2 years, they are 10-0-4. It's 702 days, Gerald, since someone beat them in a Big 12 regular season match.
Man, like I you and I, as like soccer, you're a bigger soccer fan than I am, obviously, but like I'm a big UT soccer fan. Like, I've been watching them since the inception, basically. Like, this is so cool to see them like really like becoming Texas on the soccer pitch. Like, it's just so stinking cool to see. Up next for them, taken to Morgantown on Thursday, hoping to get Lexi Missimo back, who's missed the last five matches due to injury. Men's tennis, shout out to our boy Deep Brickings on Twitter, was at the ITA All-American Championships in Tulsa. Junior Elliot Spizzieri fell in the single semifinals, and then the doubles pair of Spizzieri and Cleve Harper were down in the semifinals on Saturday. Micah Braswell and CL Wolodab made it to the round of 16 in singles. Spizzieri and Wolodab had victories over top 10 nationally ranked opponents. Next up for them, the ITA Regional, Texas Regionals, which will be held in Waco on the 13th through 17th of this month. On the ladies' side, they racked up 13 wins across 3 days at the HEB Invite, hosted by Baylor, Tech, and Tennessee. We're also involved in that one.
Yeah, on the women's side, Vivian Avrutsky went 3-0 in singles with ranked wins against 67-115 to take the singles title. On the men's side, you talked about it, a lot of top 10, including the number two doubles team for Spizzieri and Harper. I believe there was also Spizzieri had like a number 14 win, so outside the top 10, but still they probably had, I don't know, between the two teams, I'd have to guess like 20 ranked wins or better this past weekend. So a good fall showing for both men and women.
Finally, in, like we talked about, kind of a weird result in fall ball softball. Lost a game to Texas State, who's a sneaky good squad, 8-7.
Yeah, this one was a weird one. It looked like, you know, Texas State got up early, had an 8-0 kind of scoring glut in the third or fourth inning, and Texas slowly chipped away and fought back to make it 8-7. They couldn't get that final one across, but again, it showed some fight. It's not ever a time that you want to give up 8 runs, but you know, in the fall when you've been just mollywhopping the opposition before you, and you have one of your players who transferred from your team over to Texas State, so there's some familiarity and emotion. You want to win this one to fight back, I think, shows a little fight, but you know, they'll want to clean that up, right? You don't want any type of pitching that's going to give up 8 at any point in the season. Would be nice, but you know, give something for Coach White to coach on in the fall ball that doesn't necessarily count towards the record.
And that's part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions, all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I hinted at it earlier that this was a Red River shootout where basically you could pick any player at any position across and celebrate, you know, the game that they had. We had safeties who were great, interior linemen, offensive linemen, wide receivers, running backs. I mean, you pick, and there's names galore. There's seniors, there's freshmen, there's all kinds of things. But the person who I want to really shout out is Hudson Card. And just kind of the remembering how good we have it, right? This was Quinn Ewers coming back. Sark said in his presser he didn't tell them his final decision until he saw him practice. It was about Thursday when they both knew he was going to be the starter. Card had started the past few games admirably and had done great and had led Texas. We didn't get the win we wanted in Tech, but it had led us in against UTSA to a win. West Virginia, he looked great. He basically was getting better every game. You know, we just did the thing for the team and then immediately went back to his role to saying, okay, what else can I do to help the team? I'll be the backup. We'll let Quinn go out there and shine. And when you looked across the country this week, specifically this week, it showed through. You saw a guy we love, but a guy who was making his first career start for Bama and Jalen Milroe have a tough one. Three turnovers that absolutely made Texas and A&M look like, you know, they belonged on the field with Alabama, which shouldn't have, right? They outgained them by hundreds of yards, but, you know, those turnovers and another one from Alabama made it look like it was almost a game, which it was, kind of. Jalen Daniels goes down for Kansas, and they lose their first one. I mean, any team to lose a quarterback is tough, but a team with Kansas past couple years ability to recruit on like five shared wins across the past 3 years, you don't get a lot of backups there. And Kentucky, Will Levis is a guy that's been talked about as maybe he jumps everybody in the NFL draft and it's the top quarterback taken. People like his pro quarterback style, and they, you know, were barely able to muster anything, and they lost this week. Arkansas, when they had to go, you know, when you have one big giant quarterback and he's not there with an injury, you saw them look putrid. I mean, Auburn got 10 points. It was Georgia, but, you know, didn't ever look like doing anything in that game, which is a big rivalry game for them with their backup. It just, a lot of teams absolutely crumbled in the transfer portal era. It's hard to keep a backup and keep them engaged. And I think, you know, as tough as it was, and probably people gave Sark guff all offseason, I think this was very specifically the scenario that they were preparing for. The worst case scenario where you have to have two guys ready because something happens to your starter. And again, you can look across the country, and I don't know if you will see a better example of a backup stepping up and writing and readying the ship. And again, if he chooses at the end of the year when he graduates to transfer out and go somewhere and be the starter, more power to you, Hudson. We'll cheer like we did for Shane Buechele, right? We'll cheer for your whole career. We'll cheer you on the next level. If you make it there, like you will be a Longhorn for life and you will have fans. The gutsiness, even while being injured, to carry this team through so we didn't completely implode and we have a chance to be optimistic about this second half of our season now that we have Ewers back. I think the golden hat belonged to sit on Hudson Card's head as much as it did anyone else's, right? Even if he didn't complete a pass in this game, he played a huge role in bridging the kind of rough opening part to our season to where we are today with a little bit of hope and optimism going forward.
You and I have said it before, like Hudson Card played winning football throughout the stretch, whether it was Alabama, whether it was Texas Tech. He obviously played winning football in the other games as well, but like he was a guy that came in and Sark said it, you know, early in the season, like we're going to need Hudson. He said it himself. And this is one of those things, like you mentioned Shane Buechele, like specifically, like this is one of those things that he's going to get his T ring. He's graduating. He wanted to graduate from the University of Texas. It's his dream. Like I get that. I respect that. But like he could have very well just been like, nah, I'm good like that. And he would have been, I wouldn't have begrudged him. I'd have been upset about it, but I wouldn't have begrudged him a moment because you only get one football career. You only get one opportunity to play football. And most of these guys, this is the end of their career. They will never play another meaningful snap of football again. And so like seeing him stay engaged, getting him to the point where he's going to have some eligibility left moving forward. Like I am just so thoroughly impressed with that kid. I like he is like the kind of guy that you want your kids to grow up to be. Like, I cannot say it any other way. So I'm banging the drum this week on Cameron Dicker's mindset and how we should take it. So they talked, Cameron Dicker, if you don't know, was like signed to the practice squad this week and then came in and kicked a go-ahead field goal to win the Philadelphia Eagles a game, which was great, right? But they asked him about the kick and like what pressure he was under and how did you prepare for it, blah, 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 blah. And he literally said to the interviewer, I didn't treat it like any other kick. I just go out there and make it. Right? Like, that's your mindset as a kicker. And I want to encourage Texas fans with this. I am already seeing conversations around who do we need to be cheering for to optimize Texas's position to make it into Arlington. I'm seeing Twitter posts about it. I'm seeing group chats about it. And I'm going to say this as plainly as I can. If Texas finishes its food this year, We don't need to worry about anybody else. Texas is in position to just finish its plate. And if Texas finishes its plate, they have a shot to avenge that one loss, right? Because Texas Tech could not lose another game, and they would play in Arlington, and you get another crack at it. It's probably not what's going to happen. But Texas, all they have to do, finish your plate. Finish your food. Like, the teams in front, do not worry. And this is not just for Texas fan. Hopefully the players feel this way, and I'm sure they do because Sark has mentioned it specifically. But, like, don't worry about all that. Like, don't start the conversation. Don't worry about the noise. Just finish your food. I have a 5-year-old with ADHD, and I have this conversation every stinking night at dinner. Don't worry about your brothers. Don't worry about what's going on under the table. Don't worry about anything else. Just finish your plate, and everything else will work itself out. And that is the mindset that Texas needs to have going into the rest of the season. Just finish your plate, and everything else will work itself out.
Remember, you won that game last week. Oh, you didn't lose it. You went out and won it. You did what you had to do. You were the Cheez-It Bowl's national team of the week. You woke up the cheesiest. And so, you know, just every week, that's my advice for this team. Just go out there and wake up feeling the cheesiest. Like, put that that mature cheese all over whoever has the unfortunate displeasure of coming up and facing the Longhorns. If they have a defense that gives up 24 yards in 23 plays, two of those coming on the first and last play of the half. That's right, 22 of the 24 net yards that Texas gave up in the second half were on the first and last play of the half, two plays. Otherwise, they gave up 2 net yards in the second half. If you have a team, a defense that can do that, an offense that can score and execute the way, you have to feel confident, but you have to block everything else out, and you have to go in with the optimized mindset that you had in this one where you are going to beat the other team. You don't have to worry about them losing. You don't have to worry about someone giving you anything. Go out and beat your opponent.
Just finish your plate. And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. So we'll be back on Thursday with your full Iowa State preview. We'll also have some BOL for you, some Godzilla Tron, all that fun stuff. Thank you so much for tuning in again this weekend. Until next time, hook 'em.
Hook'em. It's 9:23 p.m. And, like, honestly, very much seriously, OU still sucks. They suck.